Hi, everybody, and thanks for joining our weekly podcast. I'm Robin Lewis, founder and CEO of The Robin Report, and along with my co-host of our Retail Unwrapped podcast, Shelley Cohan, who is also an associate professor at the Fashion Institute of Technology. We both welcome you to today's conversation, from hot to not. Or knowing when and how to reposition brands that are on fire. You know, Shelley, I wrote an article titled, Can All Birds Recover? And the opening paragraph said, how long do you think it's going to take all birds to crash? Which is a pretty harsh question for them. It happened to ANF. In its Michael Jeffries era,
right?
It happened to The Gap after Mickey Drexler's era, right?
Yep.
It happened to Michael Kors and Tommy Hilfiger, both under the famous pump and dump team of Silas Chow and Lawrence Stroll. And it happened to Juicy Couture under Liz Claiborne. Now it's happening to VF Corporation Supreme. The once hottest brand, you know, that young consumers would wait in line for hours to purchase that brand. And, you know, Shelley, there are obviously generations of many other brands that cycled through the same kind of hot to cold trajectories, each in symbolic Icarus ascendant to a downward spiraling crash. So, and while I thought about, you know, this podcast and my old alma mater, VF Corporation, and not only its current problem with Supreme, as well as Vans, both, by the way, hot brands when VF acquired them, this sends a message, and that, in my opinion, is an example of how a company and or a brand's culture can be diametrically opposite of the brand they acquire and therefore can cause the ultimate demise of the acquired brand. Simply put, VF's culture has always been, even when I was there, you know, kind of like a buttoned-up, conservative, I like to use the term bank-like, you know, and remaining under the radar, not wanting a lot of publicity out there. And that was kind of their DNA. And by the way, Shelley, don't get me wrong. As you've heard me say many times, they are one of the most successful apparel companies in the industry. And then comes along Supreme, a hot and at once cool, young, entrepreneurial, waiting lines around the block for hours to buy the brand. And then VF declares in the beginning that they will not interfere with the brand's culture and their positioning. They aren't going to interfere with its kind of scarcity strategy. On purpose to fuel the young consumer's growing desire for it. I mean, they just got to the point where it got to be an emotional craziness for that brand. Anyway, VF says they will only assist Supreme in all of the corporate stuff, right? Like back office, sourcing, distribution, HR, finance, and so forth. You know, where you can consolidate a lot of that stuff and it can be operated fairly efficiently. So, long story short, Shelley, somehow a Supreme got kind of sucked into VF's banking culture, so to speak. And I don't believe VF could contain its eagerness to accelerate Supreme's growth. However, and here's the big failure. such acceleration would, at the end of the day, Shelley, would have to be strategized by the VF banking culture. Excuse me. Again, however, I'm not calling VF out for this one misstep. They're still a superior player in the apparel space. So, Shelley, maybe you can start us off with some of the recent VF financials and your view on this kind of culture issue.
Sure, Robin. I would love to jump into the numbers, which I will get to in a second. But maybe some of our audience may not know the work you actually did at VF Corp and the culture at that time. So I think it would be interesting to hear from you about your perspective, if that culture has changed from the time you were there. Before, you were inside the company, now you're outside looking in. But what was it like to work at the one of the world's largest, biggest apparel manufacturers? And I think at that time, Wrangler was one of the biggest brands they had, but they also spun that off. Why'd they do that? I mean, back in, you go back to 1986, Bluebell, which owned Wrangler, JanSport, Red Cap, they were all acquired by VF Corp, which at that time brought VF Corp as the world's largest publicly traded apparel company.
Yeah, I'm glad you reminded me of that, Shelley. And you know what? Actually, it's a good suggestion to give our listeners some context. And yes, I was there in reality from 1980 to 1990. And when I was there, they had two substantial brands, Lee Jeans and Vanity Fair Intimate Apparel. I was hired in 1980 to report to the CEO and to oversee the marketing of both of those brands.
Wow.
And coming from gray advertising, this was in the middle of the Mad Men era. So it did not take me long to live and breathe VF's culture, which was so different than the advertising world. First of all, this was also before they sourced offshore. So a huge amount of strategy and CapEx went into the manufacturing assets.
Interesting.
You know, to the point where some of us, me included, started to say, are we in the manufacturing business or the brand business? Another way to put it, the culture was largely dominated by the operators, the production into the business. So the culture was really formed around a block and tackle business, which is one way to describe it, kind of like the Green Bay Packers. You know, very conservative, not throwing a lot of Hail Mary passes, adverse also to too much Wall Street scrutiny. Keep your head down and move forward. And that was kind of the culture. And they would measure the success of each step going forward. And then, as you pointed out, Shelley, the mid-1980s, the Bluebell acquisition and all those brands you mentioned, and also at that time manufacturing went offshore. Then, of course, new management started to come in, and they were more experienced brand managers, of which I was a part of, and a new CEO came, and the culture began to shift a bit towards more of a marketing-driven culture and a little more stomach, you know, for risk-taking. And acquisition searching and corporate strategy turned towards performance sportswear. Thus, you know, eventually the North Face, Vans, Timberland, JanSport, and some others in there. Yes, as you said, making them the largest branded apparel company in the U.S. So given those brands and a new culture, who did not see that Supreme would be an outlier brand whose culture would just never fit, And the attempt to change it really had to lead to disaster. But one more thing I'll stick in here, which I didn't mention. The Lee and Wrangler brands were very strong brands at the time.
Yeah. So
in fact, combined, I think our revenues were larger than Levi's.
Yeah.
And we owned the female market at that time because of the designer building in the U-shaped crotch versus the V-shape. So the U-shaped crotch had a better fit for women. So Lee won that biggest market share of jeans. But when the new brand management people came in and so forth, and the heavy strategy looking forward got down to business, the decision was made that Wrangler and Lee were pretty well, what's the word I want to use here? Pretty well mature.
Mm-hmm.
And since they wanted to get some of these heavy performance brands, they sold those two brands. And I forget the company that took them on. They're still out there. I don't know how strong they are. But anyway, that's what happened to the jeans business.
Yeah, I actually think Levi has now taken over that women's category.
Well, I think you're right. And I don't know whether they changed the structure of the product. Maybe they did. I don't know.
Well, those are great insights, Robin. And I guess the question remains if VF Corp is turnaround or going down.
Good question.
Let's start with a brief recap of Q1 results. Remember, Robin, Q1 for VF Corp is April, May, and June.
Right.
So it's a little bit later in the year. Revenue was down 8%. And, you know, the company said that was, quote unquote, expected. I love it when they say it was expected to be down. That's your whole thing about pleasing the Wall Street, right?
That's it.
And, but the revenue in North America was down 15%. So it's a bit problematic. Of the four major brands, North Face had positive comps. The only one that had positive comps, they were up 12% compared to last year, same time. But the other three big brands were down. Everyone's talking about Vans being down 22%. Yep. Dickies was down 20%. And Timberline was down 6%. So as we discussed in our podcast, we did the from wholesale to retail brands are trying to achieve a balance. Mm-hmm. We talked about how retail brands are really pulling back the wholesale orders. And for VF Corp, this was also especially true. So when you look at that whole side of the business, which is about 53% of the total revenue, sales were down 12%. The direct-to-consumer for VF Corp was down 3%. So overall, not a great picture or performance, but the new CEO, who I believe at the time of the earnings call was on his 12th day, has grand plans to turn the business around.
Yeah. I don't know him, but you and I have been talking about this pulling back on inventory holdings, you know, SKU rationalization and creating better efficiencies in the supply chain. And Kevin Bailey, the global brand president of Vans, is doing just that. Remember when he was with Vans back in 2009 to 2016 as the brand president, he doubled the business.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And last year, VF brought him back to revive the brand. So, the steep 22% drop in revenue is certainly heavily concerning, particularly for a company like VF with such a conservative culture, but they are on track to see positive changes in the business trajectory going into July and August, you know, with back to school and then holiday. The company said in its recent earnings call, it is reducing its SKUs by 20 to 30%.
Wow. So yeah, I think when you look at Vans is a pretty significant part of their business. I think it's like 35% of their business. So
yeah,
that is definitely concerning. But if you think about reducing the SKU count by 20 to 30%, that's certainly going to be create a big opportunity to fix the supply chain issues.
Right.
You know, it's simply less output of styles. So it's going to provide a cleaner merchandising story in the stores as well. So the other area that they're addressing, Vans in particular, is not having enough new innovative products in stores, online, with the retail partners. So that's really missing a mark with its core Van customer.
Yeah.
But I agree, Robin. I believe they're on a turnaround, and who better to do it than the guy that did it 10 years ago, right?
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah, Kevin knows the brand better than anyone. I actually think he's worked for Vans for 20 years, and 10 of that was as the president back then. So, and by the way, Robin, here's a little fun fact. Vans loyalty program added 1 million members in Q1.
Wow.
So that's a great sign.
Yeah, yeah.
But enough about Vans. The whole active segment, so if you look at that active segment, it includes Vans, Supreme, Kipling, Napa Jewelry, Eastpak, JanSport. That whole segment dropped 15% for the quarter. But Robin, here's the kicker with the active segment. Profits dropped 42% Q1 compared to last year. So they certainly have their work cut out for them heading into the second half of the year.
Yeah, well, you know, that profit drop, when I was there, it would have caused a few people to have heart attacks. I mean, that's enormous for that company. Incredible. Well, we'll see how bringing the guy back for Vans, if he can do his magic a second time. I mean, it's like Bob Iger got called out of retirement to come back to Disney and try to straighten that mess out. So we'll see. I mean, we will see. You know, the Supreme numbers are not shown on the quarterly reports, but last year, the Supreme revenue dropped 7% and profits were down 21%. So certainly not a hot brand. So going back to the whole cultural question, Shelley, Supreme and VF Corporation is a clash of cultures.
Well, Robin, as you open, you know, this mismatch of cultures coming together has many different examples. And one we can look at is Sonia Signal. She was heading up.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, she signed a 10-year contract with Kanye West to get that exclusive for his new Yeezy brand, which was a train wreck from the beginning. But then shot dead when Kanye started making anti-Semitic remarks.
Yep.
But even without that, even if you take that out, the brand was a mismatch for their core customer.
Yep.
So Mickey Drexler advised Kanye West from the very beginning that the Gap was a bad idea. He said he still had friends at the Gap, and he pointed out that this mismatch of a huge public corporation with the world that Kanye lived in was not a match. So ironically, Sonia Signal had a successful tenure leading up the Old Navy. She added $1 billion to the top line. And likely that's the reason she got that Gap Inc. CEO spot. But because of that, but the Yeezy decision and its outcome probably had something to do with her departure from the Gap as well. So
yeah, I think it did.
Sometimes the culture issue feels right, but the cool brands are fickle and they come with a lot of personality. Some not so great. And we can look at Adidas and the Yee agreement, which on the surface seemed to be a good cultural fit.
Yeah.
And after the behavior of Kanye, Adidas was sort of quick to cut ties. Took them a little bit of time. But
yeah, I also want to jump in here and make one quick comment. You know, you tie your brand to any of these athletic stars, movie stars, I don't care who, but the minute that they go over the edge on some social issues or, some racial slur or something like that, well, you saw it happen to Coors Light with the transgender issue.
Bud Light.
Yeah, the Bud Light, I'm sorry. anyway, the a lot of those brands, like fail overnight just because they attach them to the wrong people. Or no, people who are terrifically popular, but, for some reason, they go over the edge on some issue they should not go on. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, and I think, Robin, that's kind of a twofold issue. One is the fact that we are really dealing with a value-based consumer. Like, they really care about value. So that's one major problem when things don't go well. And the second one is, you know, there's so much social media out there. Like, you know, everything is being watched, videotaped, monitored, you know, so that's the other challenge there. But I think your description, Robin, of the conservative bank under the radar DNA meets the young, lively entrepreneur, you know, may not always be the best match. You know, there's cultural fit and there's customer fit. And at the end of the day, the target market has to accept the brand and the brand has to accept the structure of a big company. And I'll end this little point by saying, while resources might be plentiful, so you look at VF Corp and all the resources they had that you mentioned, supply chain, HR, all of that, you know, execution may not be able to actually scale down to that small entrepreneurial business.
Right.
As what happened with VF and Supreme.
Very, very good point. And also, one of the issues for big public companies, which we have often talked about, is the Wall Street pressure on quarter in and quarter out growths, right? So many of them are continually on the hunt for acquisitions. And especially if their acquisition targets are hot, like Supreme. I mean, the temptation for these big public companies for a quick, you know, kind of bolt on business is great because it gives them some, you know, immediate lift in their revenues. And, but that's mistake number one. There's got to be a well thought out synergistic strategy, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Another mistake made by these big players, you know, like Amazon. I think we're going to be talking about them again, maybe next week, is, you know, rather than acquiring a successful physical retailer, they decided to build out their own. And of course, you know, that's the old buy or build decision.
That's right.
Yeah. And we saw, and I wrote about, Amazon spent billions of dollars in a few years testing all kinds of different retail models, and none of them worked. Enter Jassy, the new CEO, obviously a very smart guy, probably engineering. Huge engineering background, having built Amazon's extremely successful Amazon Web Services division. So what does he do? One of his first big decisions was to shut down the physical retail pursuit. You know, I wrote about this and, you know, we talked about this. They should have acquired at the time Kohl's, for example. Kohl's was doing okay when they started that retail strategy, or buy ANF, or any of a lot of physical retailers out there, because overnight, like with Kohl's, they would have 1,100 locations. They would have experienced retailers running the business. They would have a dominant apparel business, and on and on and on, versus building out a long time and billions of dollars, you know, really just kind of wasted when you think about it.
Yeah, well, Robin, this whole idea of build or buy brings up into another growth potential for retailers. Two great examples, strategic partners, is the Ulta at Target, Ulta Beauty at Target, and Sephora at Kohl's.
Both
I think they're both incredible strategic partnerships. I don't think Target or Kohl's really did a great job with cosmetics. It's very high SKU intensive. And by bringing in these partners, you know, it's a win-win for them. And Michael Gould, the former CEO of Bloomingdale's, I believe he said to you that some form of concession model in Europe is a no-brainer. So,
let me also comment on the Sephora thing and Kohl's coming together. A few years in the early 2000s, I was consulting Kohl's. I'd go out there like on a monthly basis. So anyway, they had a terrible beauty business. And for some reason, they could just never get it off the ground. But But here, you know, I'm sure Michelle Gass put that idea together, and I think it's going to be tremendously successful in Kohl's. But Kohl's has got a whole slew of other problems, which we don't even need to go into. Just a little side story.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of the retail brands that have caught on to the concession model. Nordstrom's is moving from, it used to have 5%, it's going up to 30. I've heard in some cases 50% concession model. Best Buy's done very well with the concession model. And it makes sense in electronics environment, especially from a service perspective and inventory holdings. But, you know, it's not always a perfect match, as we know. I never understood when it was announced, and I lived through it, and I saw the end of it. I never understood the Sephora JCPenney partnership.
Oh, I thought.
I think the value of that was absolutely one-sided for sure. And Sephora signed a 15-year agreement, which ended contentiously when the company decided to, you know, move over to Kohl's, which to me makes better sense. But JCPenney also said Sephora's sophisticated, savvy customer was not shopping in the other areas of the department store. Robin, I could have told you that before the ink was dry on the agreement.
Yeah, no. And also, Shelley, no, I'll give you an actual number here. Sephora was doing something like $600 a square foot. And that's in JCPenney, who probably lucky year in and year out if they do, what, $150 a square foot? So, yeah.
Yeah. So, and even when a match is made in heaven, it can still have a bumpy road. Remember Macy's versus Martha Stewart?
Oh, do I ever? Yeah.
2006, they entered into this beautiful romance of a partnership. They built up a $250 million empire. That was back in 2012. Then Martha tried a similar deal with JCPenney's, and Macy's sued. And by the way, Macy's won.
And by the way, Terry Lundgren, CEO at the time, was absolutely fuming. Well, yeah, I think he even called her up directly. I don't know. Anyway,
I'm sure he did. And then, Jeff Gennett and Martha just signed the new deal a couple of years ago. So I'm sure it's well above the $250 million. So even when things look great, you know, there's always a problem, right?
Yeah, yeah. So the synergy really has to be there and make sense. Like you said earlier, it's got to make sense to the customer, but also to the brands. The ecosystem has to be strategic with the same long-term goals. You know, and then there are the building out of new product categories or new distribution models for growth, right?
Right.
Nike expanding into the gym industry, which, you know, is a natural for them. I mean, that is a synergistic fit. Or Target and Macy's, both, you know, pursuing these small neighborhood store strategies to move closer and closer to the consumer. So anyway, there are all kinds of new ways that retailers and brands today are cooperating, working together, finding new distribution channels, and on and on. It's a whole new world, really.
Yeah. And I think there's this like hyper collaboration going on in today's retail landscape between wholesale, retail, technology companies, other vendors. And I think that's really making that innovation come much faster today than it ever has.
Yes.
And circling back to where we started, I think VF Corp will turn it around, and it's learned a lot from its smaller brands and historically has always run a good balance of wholesale and retail. So the company will get balance back. But the outcome will probably be very different than it was 10, 20, 30 years ago, for sure.
Yeah, it's going to have to, Shelley. But I totally agree with you. I have lost many of the deep informers I once had because of the time I was there. And particularly those that I used to know in the C-suite, you know, and I could pick up a phone and call them and so forth. But there is enough of the new culture, I think, still in place, and which drove the initial growth of those newly acquired major active sportswear brands, and a healthy omnichannel balance, which you pointed out, for all of their brands. So I, too, do believe a turnaround is possible, Shelley. Yet a final note, I sadly just do not see a vibrant Supreme at the end of the day in that group.
Well, we'll see how that will play out. For our listeners, you can find more of our podcast on Apple, Spotify, Buzzsprout, and therobinreport.com. And please follow us on social media. Link in with us for the latest thoughts about the industry.
And thank you all again for coming on and listening to us. And if anybody has a topic that you would like Shelly and I to cover, send me an email, robin@therobinreport.com. Thanks again.